Good evening and welcome to Your Call. This week's guest is a rare visitor to a television studio, someone who knows Delhi intimately and has probably one of the most difficult jobs in India right now, Delhi's new police commissioner, Neeraj Kumar. Mr. Kumar, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I said one of the most difficult jobs in India, and that's because, of course, you have... It's a double-edged sword in a sense, because you report to the central government, the Home Ministry. You also report to the people of Delhi, and both are very demanding masters. On the one hand, you're guarding India's center of government. On the other hand, there are the normal city problems of women's safety and other issues. How do you balance tackling terror, Delhi as a target of terror, and Delhi as India's crime capital?
First of all, the job of Delhi Police Commissioner is the most challenging police job, and it is on account of a variety of reasons. The fact is, ours is the capital of the country. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens here is followed very closely by the people all over the country, not only people in the city. And what we do also sets the benchmark for other police forces. In areas of metropolitan policing, fighting terrorism, looking after women's safety, and so on and so forth. So, the task at hand is extremely challenging and also exciting.
You said one your top priority is how to counter terror. We've seen Delhi a target of repeated terror attacks as well. You've come in at a time when the special cell has Abu Jindal in custody. You've had a special briefing on that. What is the most important aspect that you can reveal so far, which has come out of the Abu Jindal interrogation, which has perhaps filled in the blanks or has been a missing link?
It would not be proper for me to divulge those details, but suffice it to say that he has given us specific information about terror networks, how they operate in the country, how they operate outside, how they get support outside, and so we have to look at the forward and backward linkages arising out of his arrest and the details he has given in his interrogation.
We've seen, I think, really since 9/11 in the United States that terror has known no borders. But one big difference between, say, the United States and the UK is that after they've had major terror attacks, the lessons they've learned both in intelligence gathering and prevention have meant that they've had no major terror attack take place after that. Whereas in Delhi, you've seen the deja vu of attacks happen in virtually the same place in the Delhi High Court. You've seen busy markets targeted again and again. The charge being that the Delhi police never learns, intelligence agency never learn. How is that going to change?
No, it is not fair to compare our country with the US or the UK. We have thousands of miles of porous borders with neighboring countries, say Nepal, Bangladesh. We have a coastal area which is also huge. So the tackling terror in India is a totally different ball game. Mm-hmm. We also have people within our population who are sympathizers, who feel let down, who are susceptible to indoctrination. So the entire complexion of terrorism in India is different from what we see it in the UK or in the US or any other country.
Mm-hmm. But in the Abu Jindal sense, he was a senior most in that sense, though of course the local links where they used more as paid operators perhaps, or how they used, was Abu Jindal the senior most a new kind of Indian terrorist in that sense?
No, I say he represents that local connection.
Yes.
In the 2611 case, mm-hmm. he represents a man who was engaged in training people about local dialects, how mm-hmm. to interact with the press, how to target selected iconic places, and so on and so forth. So he is the local link, which is important. And through him, we are now discovering that there are others as well.
So you're saying there are other people like him in the sense that also strategists, not just men who will say plant bombs, but actual strategists.
Yes, and some people who may be even more important than he is.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you're saying that because, of course, this comes at a time when this week we've had a convention in Delhi where you've heard politicians and various intellectuals talk about the fact that the police often target Muslim youth and brand innocent Muslim youth, they would say, as terrorists. You had the mother of another alleged terrorist, Fasi, speaking there about how, you know, Muslim boys are being picked up. We saw the repercussions after Bartla House, and there's so much political back and forth on it. As a police officer, as Delhi's top cop, how do you react to allegations like that?
See, every mother would react the way Fasi Mahmood's mother has reacted, or Zabi's mother or next of kin have reacted. It is but natural. For a mother, the person is first her son and then anything else. And the first reaction would always be that no, he cannot be involved in anti-national activities. Mm-hmm. But whatever they claim has to be seen in the larger context of what has come during an investigation. What has he said? What has been discovered on the basis of what he has said? And it has to be weighed. And who will do this weighing? It will be done by the courts. We are answerable. Our investigations undergo a very severe and serious judicial scrutiny.
So, but sir, the question from that is, a police officer, does it frustrate you when you see politics being played over convictions? Because in the Parliament attack case you referred to, we all know the controversy over Afzal Guru and whether he will actually be hanged or not, with despite the fact that the court convicted him. Does politics in this frustrate you?
We have to live with it. We have to live with it, and our job is to investigate impartially, investigate efficiently, and collect a sort of evidence which stands the scrutiny of the courts.
But does it send out the wrong message? Does it make a police officer, a policeman's job, much, much more difficult? Does it give the impression that India's security agencies are soft?
No, our security agencies are not soft at all. We live in a milieu where there would be reactions, whether it is reactions from the family, whether it is reaction from political parties, whether it's reaction from NGOs. It's part of the ball game. Mm-hmm.
Let me just go across to some questions. We talked about Delhi as a terror target, and some people from one of our busiest markets, Sarochi Nagar, have these questions to ask you.
यहाँ पर जब तक एनक्रोचमेंट पे काबू नहीं पाया जाएगा, हम थ्रेट में बने रहेंगे और तब भी बने रहेंगे. बैरिकेडिंग लगा दी गई है पुलिस ने, मचान एसोसिएशन ने बना दिए गए हैं, सीसीटीवी कैमरे जो हैं कभी काम करते हैं कभी नहीं करते, 26 कैमरे मार्केट में लगे हुए हैं, मॉनिटरिंग की जाती है, लेकिन उसके बाद भी आए दिन कुछ ना कुछ हमें थ्रेट मिलता रहता है.
Everything in Delhi is a top priority. They want you to make it top priority. But the CCTV cameras issue is a huge one. In fact, I remember the recent Delhi High Court that came up, and the chief minister said that I don't even have the power to transfer Delhi police constable. Why ask me? And many have pointed to this dichotomy that the police isn't politically accountable to the people of Delhi, to the government of Delhi. Do you think that sometimes is a bad thing? Or how do you think this is an odd situation?
I'm surprised. How can you say that we are not answerable to the people? Right at the beginning of the program, you said that they are our bosses. We have to answer them on a daily basis.
In public opinion, but not in transfers and postings.
No, but transfers and posting is something which we prize ourselves in claiming that ours is the only police force in the country where the political influence or is the minimum in man management of the Delhi police, and this is on account of the fact that we are virtually left alone. And why should transferring of a constable be such an issue? If somebody needs to be transferred for a lapse, the commissioner of police is there, the joint commissioner of police range is there, the deputy commissioner of police of the district is there. So they are all there to do that. Mm-hmm. So somebody should complain that so and so has not come up to the mark or is indulging in malpractices, mm-hmm. and it is for us to transfer. And why should anyone else want this power?
That's actually a very important point. That's true. Why should politicians be allowed to be in transfers at all? But on this issue of political interference, so there's been always been outrage or discomfort amongst the average citizen over the amount of security VIPs in Delhi get. In fact, a recent Home Ministry report for states around the country made the point that I think it's three policemen for a VIP compared to one policeman for 761 citizens. How do you balance that? Because often for VIPs, security is a status symbol as well.
What we have to understand is that VVIPs have to be guarded. The President of the United States of America, whenever he moves, a huge contingent of security moves. But our people never talk about that. You know, his bulletproof cars arrived much before he does. Their security people in hordes arrive much before he does. And we never talk about, we always say, oh, what a beautiful and what an excellent security system the US president has. See, VVIPs have to be protected. They are our representatives. If they are allowed to remain unguarded and if they come to harm, say, that member of parliament or that minister or that VVIP is not the person, behind him are, you know, millions of people whom he represents. So we have to guard them. At the same time, we should see that it is done in an efficient way, and unnecessary deployment of people is not there.
Right. Well, I have an MP actually who has a question to ask you. Rajiv Pratap Rudi of the BJP joins us. Mr. Rudi, go ahead with your question.
Mumbai has a system where lanes are earmarked for traffic. Now, if someone has to go left, will go into the left lane. Unlike in Delhi, anyone wanting to go in any direction will enter any lane and turn any side. So these are the basic principled understanding of traffic, which possibly has been an oversight. And when I hear you, I also find it an oversight because I am unable to explain. Because most of the problem with Delhi police officers are that they are repository of wisdom. Sorry, not for you, but whenever you talk to anyone, they know Delhi, they have seen Delhi, and they run Delhi. So we have to get out of this thing and start realizing what the people think about it. This is one aspect of traffic. I can come back and tell you a few more things which possibly most of the officers don't listen. And we as politicians, if we speak, we are also not repository of wisdom. So this is an understanding. So I think the dialogue at that level should be improved, and possibly just hearing out things would help many things rather than because we would never be in a position to argue with officers, whether it's a sub-inspector on a road or a ACP or a DCP. So Delhi police is the best, and this is what we say, but best doesn't mean that there is no hearing given to a government.
No, we are not arguing. I'm sorry if I have given you that impression. We are discussing, and when we discuss, we try to understand each other and come to a solution. No, your point that going left is obstructed by improper lane driving or improper traffic management at that point is unexceptional. I mean, there is no debate over that. What I was saying is that, in Delhi, left turn at most crossings are free.
Yes.
I mean, supposing there is no unauthorized parking or if it is free, the man turning left will not stop and he will just go through. It is not so in other countries, you may have noticed. And for the simple reason is that we have to take into account the pedestrian. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I have taken your point and there was no desire to argue or to sound like a repository of wisdom. That is never the case. In all humility, I wish to tell you that, and many other of most of us take pride in the fact that in our profession, we do have a bit of knowledge. like I would never dispute the knowledge that Mr. Rudy has in politics. I can never match up to that.
I don't know. No wisdom in politics.
Well, hopefully this interaction may actually change one of Delhi's biggest banes. Rajiv, thanks so much for that. And obviously, great passion in that question. So something which has really, I think, taken up your thinking and mind as well. Mr. Neeraj Kumar, thanks for responding to that. But I'm going to go across. We're talking about traffic and driving. I'm going to go across now to another sad case. And we talk about outskirts of Delhi and borders. And of course, Delhi bordered by Gurgaon and Noida, and so much of what happens there affects us as well. And one of the huge issues is also drunk driving. And we have a young man, and the very sad case, he lost his wife who was pregnant, Shama. Thank you for joining us on this program at a difficult time for you. And in fact, Shailesh, just one aspect I'd like to ask you as well, because we've seen the whole campaign, people asking that justice for your wife who was so tragically killed. What is the experience like when someone like you, your family, has to deal with police force, those investigating? Somehow the belief always is that do the police often favor the person behind the wheel, that it's actually the victim or the victim's family who are the ones who end up suffering?
Yeah, and my personal experience, I might sound like a broken record here, but it's been absolutely miserable. More because actually in this accident, we had, you know, two deaths, and if I can call my unborn's kind of death, then it's a third death. The remaining three people have been bedridden. My mother-in-law is still kind of, you know, we're fighting for her life every day. I've been bedridden. My father-in-law has been bedridden. So there is, you know, from our side, we're just running around to save our lives right now. And the only thing, honestly, we can do right now is, you know, trust police, trust the system, trust the judiciary, and hope and pray that, you know, that we will get justice. So that's what it is for me right now.
Again, this happened in Gurgaon, so it's not directly under you at all. But this story is a story in the last years of television reporting that I've spoken to family after family. And you see people who are driving a car, who are speeding, who may even be drunk, walking away on bail. And the answer is, oh, it's a bailable offense. And you have whole lives of families destroyed because of this. What would you say to Shailesh today?
See, drunken driving is a serious issue in our city as well as in Gurgaon. Here again, I believe that just enforcement and, you know, prosecution will not help. What, for instance, we are doing immediately, we are interacting with all the pub owners and the night haunt owners and telling them that, look, you are serving drinks to people, but you must warn them that if they do not have anyone else to drive for them, then they will be spotted, they will be prosecuted. And now the courts have ruled that drunken driving, if it is dangerous, you know, the man goes to jail. And many people have gone to jail. So drunken driving is at the forefront of our enforcement strategy. And this will be there again in a very intensive way. There will be the traffic police, there will be the local police, and there will be the police control room vans also there. So outside these pubs, we will spot these people, we will prosecute them, and we will make sure that you know, justice is, you know, they are brought to book. Now, I would just like to tell our colleague with whom this accident has Shailesh, which that this is this happened in Gurgaon, it could have happened even in Delhi. My heartfelt sympathies, and all I can say is that even though it is out of my jurisdiction, but I will take details of your case from NDTV, and I will speak to my counterpart and ensure that justice is done.
Shailesh, would you like to say something to Mr. Kumar? I think that is an important assurance there, because sometimes really putting pressure at the right place helps. Not sometimes, always, I think, sadly, in Delhi and Gurgaon.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you so much, sir, for, you know, offering this help. I'll certainly kind of, you know, would like to kind of, you know, bring it to your notice. And hopefully, you know, you'll be able to actually help me as well. Honestly, you know, as a layman, actually, you know, who's gone through this kind of, you know, incident, sometimes, you know, you are a victim, you are hospitalized, and you just don't know what to do. It will, you know, really kind of, you know, just kind of you to offer this help at this point.
Shailesh, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We will give the details to Mr. Kumar and we will follow this case as well. Thank you for joining us tonight. You mentioned yourself that one of your big priorities will, of course, be safety of women. I have somebody else who's extremely concerned about that. Nafisa Ali, social activist, joins me tonight. Nafisa Ali, go ahead with your question for Mr. Neeraj Kumar.
Firstly, Mr. Kumar, I'd like to congratulate you on becoming commissioner. I would like to share my personal experience. I started a boutique in Merchant Market. There is a gang of, history cheaters who go from boutique to boutique and areas of Delhi, and they are common thieves and stealers, but history cheaters. The police know about it, but unfortunately what is happening is the judiciary gives them bail and they continue to steal. And this is a nuisance in Delhi. And thanks to my case coming up, I have met and so many shop owners have come to me to raise my voice. And therefore, through my activism, I make you once again, I request you once again to find a way out, because this particular gang is from Paharganj. There is a whole family, old lady, fat ladies, little young boys, old men. And the thing is, they can all be recognized. We know them all, but the case takes so long, and before you know it, they are all free again, on to their next theft. So, as the commissioner now, when I'm telling you that these are practical reality problems of Delhi, what are you going to do to help better policing and strengthen the hand of the police?
You don't need a revolver, sir. You need a magic wand, because I think everybody in Delhi will have a problem with the police they can tell you about.
No, we welcome people coming forward and reporting to us. I'm grateful to Nafisa ji. I knew your father. He had designed a stamp for the Interpol conference when I was the conference secretary.
Yes.
And I was the conference secretary in that, and I had...
So you know how much I love the police.
Yes, and you had come for the inaugural function as well, and I made sure that, you attended the function.
But, correct, I've come to Tehar too.
Yes.
And there's another issue, quickly, because I don't believe in wasting time. I remember when my uncle Indrajit Gupta was the Home Minister of India. At that time, he was working towards the police reform, which is archaic and British time. So now as the commissioner, the whole system is failing the police. So you must take this up, because from Jawan up, you all need help. You need strength. You need to become stronger as a force. And the government must support you. But as the commissioner, if you don't raise your voice, yet again, another home minister will come, another government will come, and then we'll be again struggling trying to do police reform.
In fact, the Supreme Court has made this point as well, that what about the police themselves? How do you battle the various problems which have been outlined in report after report on police reforms are gathering dust?
Now, the two issues. First issue was what Nafisa ji mentioned about
the
gang operating.
Merchant Market.
And she herself said that...
No, all Delhi.
Yes. Yes. I can immediately guess what gang it is and... what kind of group socio-economic milieu they come from, and
they come
you
in the same vehicle to every market.
Yes, yes. You yourself said that they have been caught.
Yes.
They go to the court. They come out.
I've seen them.
Yes, you are right. I don't disagree with you. What I'm saying is that this is a problem that we also face.
Mm-hmm.
We book. We put whatever evidence we have before the court, but because of the punishment meted out to them is quite meager, and they get bail, they come out again, and they resume their activities. That is why we have made them history cheaters. That is why we maintain surveillance over them, or at least we mean to maintain surveillance over
yes.
them. So that is one aspect. Coming to this specific case, Meher Chand Market means Lodi Colony Police Station, So I will look into it and find out who.
No, please don't look into it.
No, I wish to.
It's irrelevant.
I wish to.
I want to be an example.
No, see, each instance of crime or incidence of crime is an area which we must probe, get to the bottom, because then a lot of other things emerge. We have to see.
The Santushti.
One minute.
The Santushti market who had a theft, he came to me with this information, and it's the same people.
We'll just let Mr. Kumar finish because it may become a bit too local for our viewers.
I understand that they are habitual criminals. I'll just finish. They are habitual criminals, and how they have been handled or how they have been dealt with by the police or the police station of which they are history sheeters, all that needs to be looked into. Every case that is coming to my notice, I go to the bottom of it. Have their dossiers been made? Are they being surveilled regularly if they are history sheeters? I am looking into it. So in your case, in the case you have pointed out, I will go into these minor details. Now, second point you raised was about the police reforms. The Delhi Police Act is being drafted. Mm-hmm. And the Delhi Police Act is going to be an example to all other states. So therefore, we are paying a lot of attention to the drafting of the Police Act, because this is going to replace the archaic law of 1861.
British old archaic law.
So we are totally involved. We are looking into each and every punctuation mark and each and every term and each and every provision in great detail. We have dedicated officers who are looking into it. So we are totally seized of the matter, and when we say that our police is colonial police because it is based on 1861 Act. If you want a modern police, let us have a modern police act. Mm-hmm. And so we Absolutely. Are going to draft an
Mr.
act.
Mr. Kumar, don't fear, we are with you.
Nafisa, thanks.
Thank you very much.
And thanks so much for joining us tonight with those questions. Thank you very much. Well, let me go across again to some people of Delhi and let's hear what they have to ask you.
Hello, sir. Sir, I just want to ask, why is it easy to give a 100 rupees note to a traffic cop to just get away on the traffic red light? So what is being done to prevent this?
Hello, sir. I just want to ask you a simple question, that will you allow your daughter walk in the night? Like, I'm 23 year old and I don't feel safe walking in the night. So I just want to ask that when a woman will be feel safe walking in the night?
But the 100 rupees bribe also to the traffic constable. Why does it seem that Delhi police can be bought with 100 rupees?
When he says 100 rupees, what he means perhaps is the 100 rupees fine that is there for red light jumping, which is a very, very small amount.
He means the 100 rupees they take without a receipt and put it in their pocket.
There are both the things. Even when he's being fined legitimately, it is only 100 rupees. And if he's accepting bribe, that is a serious matter. They wish to contact us, inform us about such instances. My email address is always there on the newspapers. They can write to me, dp.neerajkumar@nic.in. They can write to me directly. Mm-hmm. And we'll look into it.
I think that last aspect, that young girl who said that, would you even let your daughter go out alone at night in Delhi? And we've had so many people writing into me also when they knew you were coming on the show, saying one person right from America who said, I lived in Delhi, but I will not come back because my four-year-old daughter will not be safe growing up in Delhi. How do you answer young girls of the city? Would you let your daughter out alone at night in Delhi?
See, I would definitely advise my daughter not to venture out at odd hours, in areas which are poorly lit, in areas which are depressed meaning that, a certain kind of areas where there is a high probability of an incident happening. And we all need to take precaution. For instance, I mean, we take precaution when it comes to our home safety. We put grills, we put magic eyes, we put extra locks, we put door chains, we get our servants verified, we get our tenants verified. This is all part of the, you know, same security precautions. So a girl, a lady is vulnerable. Let us accept that. And a girl at night is that much more vulnerable. Therefore, if my daughter was to step out in an area which is, you know, poorly lit, where there are high chances of she coming to some harm, I'll say don't go, definitely.
But again, sir, you've seen rapes are happening in broad daylight. You've seen many, again, when you talk to people who've have had complaints, they say the mindset of the Delhi police often is, and we've seen a recent expose which we had in NDTV also, that often even policemen investigating rape, the attitude is the girl deserves it.
No, I beg to differ. Rape cases are investigated by women officers, and a lot of attention is paid to them. It may be relevant to point out that 97% of the rape cases take place inside homes and by people who are immediately known to the victim. So it is a rape as if some stranger has, you know, caught hold of a woman and raped are few, very few and far between. The last such case took place when, you know, that Dhalogwa case, we have solved it. I am proud to inform you that it is heading towards conviction and we hope that the culprits will be convicted.
Hopefully, we'll see that change in the next 13 months, sir. Those words will translate into action. But just to ask, of course, sir, your last posting was Tihar Jail. And one very interesting aspect is that you had many, many, the Lal Bati culture perhaps in Tihar Jail, because you had A. Raja, you had Kani Mori, you had Suresh Kalmadi, you had Anna Hazare for one day, you had Bangaru Lakshman. Did it surprise you as a police officer to actually see some of India's top politicians inside Tihar Jail?
No, why should it surprise?
How did you deal with it?
I mean, we dealt with them very fairly in the sense that we took utmost precautions regarding their safety. Because inside a prison, there are all kinds of people, you know, and they're hardened criminals, they're violent criminals, they're psychopaths. So, first job was to protect them. And protect them by ensuring that they are lodged in a place where others cannot access them. But having done that, everything else was the same. They all slept on the floors. They all, you know, bathed with cold water. They all, during summer months, they had to make do with the fans that we provided. Nothing extra was given. No coolers were given, no air conditioners were given. Never was an impression given to other inmates that they were being treated differently. So, you may have known that not a single complaint of that kind ever came.
The city never sleeps, sir. Does the police commissioner manage to sleep at night?
I do. Let me be honest.
Well, it's good because we need you fresh and alert for the challenges ahead. Thank you so much, Mr. Neeraj Kumar, for joining us tonight.
It has been a pleasure, Sonia. Thank you.